You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. After an exciting win over Auburn in the Outback Bowl and the hiring of a new head coach, might seem that all's well in Badger football land, but is it? When previous head coach Gary Anderson surprisingly left the team after a couple years on the job, rumors began to surface that he was frustrated with UW's difficult admission standards for incoming college freshmen and was maybe missing out on big recruits because of that. While we might not completely know what led to Anderson's departure, those rumors do raise some interesting questions as to how and when universities loosen their admission standards to admit athletes who might not qualify otherwise. Joining us now to discuss these questions is Welch Suggs. He's an associate professor of journalism at the University of Georgia. He's a former sports journalist and was the senior editor for athletics at the Chronicle of Higher Education. Welch, thanks for joining us again.
No, happy to do it, Ron. Glad to be here.
Well, let's start by looking at the college admissions process. We know grades, a big part of determining eligibility. What else can go into a decision, though?
Well, Rob, it all depends on what kind of college you're talking about, but mostly in terms of big-time college sports, we're talking about fairly selective universities, such as those in the Big Ten or the SEC. And schools typically manage their admissions process in a pretty simple way. There are some people who are going to be brilliant, some students who have great grades, great SAT scores, as you suggested, and they're going to get in automatically, or there are some who are simply not going to be competitive academically and are sort of cut off at the bottom end. And then there's a great middle pool where some people are going to get in and some people aren't. And of that group, you know, there are many, many factors that can play a role. It might be where you're from, if you're from an underserved area that the university would like to get more people from. It might be if you're a member of a racial or ethnic minority group. It might be if you're a legacy, you know, if you're someone in your family went to that school. All these factors can play in. Sometimes even children of politicians, if you're talking about large state universities, can be a factor. And, of course, athletics is another one of those.
So how much leeway do different universities, different big programs have when it comes to bringing in athletes in particular who don't meet the standards that might be there for other students?
Sure. Well, it depends on the school, mm-hmm. and different schools have different standards and all that. The NCAA does have its own set of academic requirements, but they're really pretty minimal. They're things that just about anybody can get, and they're certainly not at the level of students who are trying to get into the University of Wisconsin or the University of Georgia or places like that. So it's up to schools really to decide where to set those bars, and that's the really hard issue to tackle. You know, the NCAA and its members all say they want athletes to be student athletes and to be fully engaged with the academic experience. But when you look back through history, going all the way back to the late 19th century even, colleges and universities have always recruited athletes who weren't capable of or weren't interested in the student part of the deal. And that's what led the NCAA to start imposing academic requirements, starting with Prop 48, which some of your older listeners may remember back in the 1980s. And it's what led Cardale Jones to tweet about not going to Ohio State to play school a few months ago. But there's a sliding scale for grades and test scores under the current rules, and but as I said, they're far lower than what it would take to get into universities like Madison or UGA. So the question is, where are you going to draw the line? Where are you going to say we'll recruit these folks and not these other folks? And this can be a very political issue, but it's something that coaches face at every school at every level, whether you're talking about Harvard or Wisconsin or wherever it might happen to be.
Well, let's look at this from the side of the athlete who maybe got in, the admissions were bent a little in their favor. Are they coming out of colleges, out of universities with degrees, employable prospects, assuming that they're not one of the small percentage that goes into professional sports?
Sure. Well, you got to remember that when we're talking across athletics, most of the time people are doing the right things and kids are graduating and getting on moving degrees. But there are flags that come up. Like, I did happen to look at graduation rates for Wisconsin-Madison, and the latest stats show that Wisconsin had about 83% of all undergraduates finish their degrees in 6 years, but only about 71% of athletes did, and only about 50% of football players did. So you are seeing some kind of disparity here where you have these two pools of, you know, where you're recruiting students from one pool and athletes from another pool. And it can be tough if you think about it from the athlete side as well. It can be a difficult experience because students can sometimes resent athletes for getting what they perceive to be a free ride with a lot of perks. and athletes can be isolated and stereotyped on campus. I had one student who was a prominent football player on our team in class this past year, wrote a very moving essay about how hard it was to be so obvious walking into class, and he actually was late on the first day and felt like everyone's eyes were on him for the rest of the semester because he was singled out. So it can be a very isolating experience. And then academically, a lot of athletes are coming from poor high school backgrounds, so you have this question about whether they're going to be able to keep up in the classroom with all the other students. And at an elite academic university, the question is going to be, for folks who don't have such a strong high school background, what are they going to study and what majors are they going to be able to get done given the demands of their sports? And then the question, as you suggest, is are they in degree programs that will help them get good jobs and provide for their careers outside athletics? And most of the time, schools do a good job and athletes do a good job, and being at a school like Wisconsin can open a lot of doors. But there are plenty of cases where, especially in the revenue sports, is what we're talking about, football and men's basketball, where you have this question about whether athletes are getting the same quality of experience as other students.
I think a lot of this points toward a fundamental question about athletics and higher education. Do they, are athletics kind of, especially the big sports, the football and men's basketball, are they the tail wagging the dog, interfering with the academic mission, or are they in ways a complement for each other? How do you sort that out?
Well, some schools do a great job of balancing this. You know, Stanford is one example where they recruit an awful lot of very good athletes who are capable of taking advantage and contributing to the Stanford student experience. I spent some time out there a while back now, but you could see how schools, especially if they're very selective, have the opportunity to recruit a very well-rounded student body. So people bring different things to the table and can contribute in very good ways. But a lot of other people, and certainly a lot of professors, do see these two roles of sort of the commercial business of athletics and the academic business of the university as being in conflict, because athletes are there and their experiences are largely shaped by their coaches and by their athletic experience. So it's always a balancing act, and I don't have any information about what's happened at Madison or with Coach Anderson or whatever issues he might have faced there. But schools always try to manage this tension between academics and athletics, and sometimes they do a very good job of it, and sometimes they do a very poor job of it.
Is there pressure, maybe especially from alumni who are counted on for big donations and may want successful football and men's basketball programs and are saying, hey guys, do what you got to do to bring in the star athletes?
Oh, sure. There's always stuff like that going on. The question is whether the academic leaders of the university have the authority and the power, frankly, to deal with those kinds of issues. You know, we had a guy down here in Georgia running for in our congressional district, say dismissively that he wouldn't mind if they got rid of the entire state of Georgia or the entire University of Georgia as long as they kept the football team. And there are plenty of people who see that and see winning at all costs as being, being their main priority for their alma mater. But at the same time, there are plenty of other people who do recognize the value of education and recognize that sports has its place and that you've got to find the right line to walk in terms of admitting people who can do what's expected of them, both in the classroom and on the field. So, again, you know, I wish I could give you specifics, but you know, there's always a spectrum with these things with universities. And that's what makes it so difficult in a lot of the conversations right now about whether athletes ought to get paid or whether they should be considered as, you know, legally different from other students. You know, some people believe very strongly that they should be, amateurs, and that's an important component of American higher education. But other people would just rather see winning teams and exciting games.
Now, some schools have either eliminated things like football teams or are considering that, maybe partly because the revenue isn't coming in, maybe partly because of issues like we're talking about now. Do you think we'll see more maybe mid-level schools doing that sort of thing?
We can. I mean, that's, again, a more difficult and I think often less philosophical question. When you see a situation like the University of Alabama at Birmingham, which recently dropped football, because on their grounds they just couldn't afford it, and they could not create a competitive program where they were in a state like Alabama where football is religion. And I'm sure the same is true to a certain degree in Wisconsin as well, but down south we do football on a slightly different, higher level, not higher level, just a different level of intensity. But anyway, there are certainly schools that have decided that sports like football were not worth the trade-offs it took academically. This is probably 15 years or so ago, but Swarthmore College in Pennsylvania basically decided that they were having to make too many exceptions to their admissions policies to get in football players, and so they dropped that team. But you got to remember, Swarthmore is a tiny liberal arts college. It's about the size of Beloit or a little bit smaller, and has very, 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 very high standards. So I don't think that you're going to see many cases of that. I mean, if that were seriously an issue, then you probably would have seen football die out at the Ivy League schools, and yet they still all have football teams, and they compete at the football championship subdivision level. But it's a very difficult thing to manage. It's always been a difficult thing to manage. Back in the 40s, the University of Chicago dropped their entire athletic program because they thought it was antithetical to higher education.
We're talking with Welch Suggs of the University of Georgia about college admissions, academics, and athletics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How much should colleges be able to bend the rules on admissions to admit athletes, especially for the high-profile sports? If you are an athlete yourself, share your experience as well. Call in 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation after the news. This is Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickard will be back with me on Tuesday. We're talking now with Welch Suggs of the University of Georgia about college admissions, academics, and athletics. Close to home, former Wisconsin Badgers head coach Gary Anderson is rumored to have left his job in part because the UW wouldn't budge on loosening tight admission standards, thus maybe losing out on possible recruits. We want to know what you think about this at 800-642-1234. How flexible or inflexible do you think colleges should be with incoming athletes? Should athletics be an important part of the university experience? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Should universities let in the star athletes, even though they might not meet the academic standards coming in? Again, 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. So, Welch, you mentioned that universities and colleges have their admission standards and the rules for how they apply to athletes, and that the NCAA has their standards. Does the NCAA actively police this sort of thing?
Oh, absolutely. Academic eligibility issues are one of the main functions, frankly, of the NCAA day in and day out. So what you see is if you are a prospective athlete, then you actually have to register with the NCAA clearinghouse, and they have to verify your eligibility for you to be able to complete or to compete. So often you see cases where athletes are delayed from being able to get out there and practice or play for their teams because their eligibility is still being verified. And there are all sorts of ways to cheat the system. My former colleague Brad Wolverton at the Chronicle of Higher Education had a great piece that ran both in the Chronicle and Sports Illustrated about fixers and who can help athletes get the grades they need to get into college. So it raises an awful lot of ethical issues, but it's part of the game, frankly, these days in college sports.
Is this a case where just the sheer amount of money involved in these high-profile sports, again, the football and the men's basketball, creates temptations to some kinds of rule-bending or creative solutions to enforcement?
It is, but I think it gets beyond just the pure dollars and cents to more about a university's image or its place in the pecking order, its prestige. You know, a lot of universities will use sports to try to get themselves into the same conversation with much more elite schools. We had a college president tell me that he had moved his athletic department into Division I so that they could get on the ticker on ESPN. And his line was that, you know, we're in the same league academically with Duke and Davidson. This is a school in North Carolina. And we want to be in their league athletically, too. So he thought that by getting on the ticker so their scores would come up next to Duke's and Davidson's and so forth, that gave them an air of legitimacy. And, you know, I'm sure this is true in Madison. It's certainly true at Georgia and Michigan and Ohio State and other places I've been. You know, sports and big-time sports are such a huge part of the college culture, the college experience. And to be, it's imperative for schools like this to be competitive in football and occasionally in men's basketball, depending on where you're at. And other hot sports, too, like hockey, I'm sure, up where you are and things like that. And so schools, there simply aren't enough elite athletes to go around who can meet the admission standards of a place like Michigan or Wisconsin or Georgia, for that matter. So schools are kind of forced to bend the rules, if you want to put it that way, or to admit athletes who wouldn't otherwise be getting in to be competitive.
Let's go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We have Joe on the line in Portage. Hi, Joe.
Hey, I have experience with UW Madison, and it seems to me that a lot of the, I don't know, specifically football or basketball or the sports that would be typically filled with jocks, they just can't keep up with the academics, and it seems like it kind of gets in the minds of the kids, the smart kids, or the kids who try hard, and they see them, you know, during class cheating or not doing what they have to, but they're getting by with just because of their scholarship.
Joe, thanks a lot for the call. Welch, you mentioned earlier maybe a stigma from non-athletes toward these athletes. Do we know, I mean, are the athletes more prone to cheating or sliding through without doing much work, or is that a perception issue?
Yeah, I don't think things like that are widespread. I mean, even at a place where the standards are just going to be very divergent between athletes who come in and students who come in, I can tell you there is a lot of resentment that I hear periodically from time to time, even on a campus like this where athletes are very much lionized. But you've got to think about how hard it is for the kids who are in that position of being scholarship athletes. You know, often they'll have study hall or workouts or something first thing in the morning, and then they'll go straight to class and be in class and have to go to practice and then have to deal with team meetings and training room and this like this and that, and then study a little bit and go to bed and get back and do it all over again. So it really is like having a couple of full-time jobs on top of your academic load. So it is very stressful, and as I noted, a lot of them don't have the academic background necessarily to be competitive. So there are some people who believe, like I guess Cardale Jones must have at Ohio State, that you know school just wasn't that important compared to football. But the vast majority of athletes that I've taught or interviewed or come into contact with really are there to try to make the most out of their experience and to figure out where to go, both in their sports and when sports are over. So I think academic dishonesty and entitlement, stuff like that, there's certainly issues, but they're issues for a very few out of the vast number of, you know, half a million or so athletes in college right now.
Joe, thanks for that call. We'll go to John in Madison now. John, hi.
Hi. I attended the University of Wisconsin at Madison. My son is a graduate. My daughter-in-law is a graduate. And I think that the University of Wisconsin has its priorities right and are able to compete at the level of the Big Ten. And they do a pretty good job of it, especially when you look across the whole board of the athletic program. They have one of the best programs in the country. So I think they have the priorities right, and I'm proud to be a part of, or related at least, to that system and part of Wisconsin that is represented by this great institution.
John, thanks a lot for that call. He's endorsing UW-Madison's approach. Welch, do you think that a lot of schools, for the most part, are getting it right?
I think so, for the most part. I mean, when you think about Madison, you know, obviously they weren't there, or the football team wasn't that far from getting into the championship playoff, the finals of which are going to be Monday. So I think that by and large they do, but there are certainly plenty of cases on any campus that you want to point to where athletes are not getting a fair shake one way or another. It may not be their fault. It may not be their fault. But there's always going to be that tension, whatever campus you happen to be on, between the athletic priorities or the commercial priorities of the athletic department and the academic priorities of the university. And some places can mostly keep that balance. They can walk that line. But every year there's going to be some kind of challenge.
John, thanks for the call. We'll go to Greg in Waukesha now. Greg, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a question about why wouldn't student athletes just be classified as employees of the university, student workers, and participate in sports, but they're doing that primarily or purely for money for the university and entertainment. So why not call it that, but let them be employees, let them be student workers, and let them be admitted solely upon their academic standing, and yet, if they happen to be good athletes, let them participate as a student worker in extracurriculars. Because that's, after all, that's really what it is. It's the job.
Greg, thanks a lot for the call. There's been a lot of talk, and you alluded to this earlier, Welch, about the idea of some student athletes being paid for playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is actually the subject of a couple of major lawsuits that are going on right now about whether athletes, college athletes, have commercial rights or rights to some of the money, the billions of dollars that flows in through broadcast contracts and payoffs from bowl games and this, that, and the other in athletic programs. And I guess there's an idealistic answer and a cynical answer to that. And the idealistic answer is that the schools have done this form of amateur sports, with athletes who are not paid but do get scholarships, now for about 110 years in round numbers. This has always been the premise of college sports, is that athletes are treated as amateurs, treated as students, and not as professionals there to play a game. And the NCAA would make that call and say this is a great and noble thing, that they are learning special lessons and getting a special experience in college, et cetera, et cetera. The more cynical answer is that it's a money grab by the schools, and they benefit tremendously from having an unpaid labor force. And so the NCAA and all of its member institutions have fought tooth and nail to prevent any move towards getting athletes classified as employees because of all of the money that would cost and all of the headaches that that would engender. You know, you think about paying people, you think about being subject to workers' comp claims, which may yet happen with the concussion epidemic and things like that. So it could happen. You know, it probably would be a more honest way of doing business. But the only way it's going to happen is if the courts find athletes to be employees and entitled to compensation under the wage laws. And sometimes I pretend to be a lawyer, but I'm certainly not a good enough one to predict how that's going to come out.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for joining us and talking about these fairly complicated issues.
Absolutely. Happy to do it, Rob.
That's Welch Suggs. He's an associate professor of journalism at the University of Georgia. He's also a former sports journalist and was the senior editor for athletics at the Chronicle of Higher Education.